Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Today, we have mages, sages, and seers, and a community wellness crossover. But first, we will listen to Virginia Ackley's If You Can Dream.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky. But only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal. But only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free. But only if you can dream. When love and trust are deep and fair, there is nothing yours heart won't dare. But only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. Dream till it's real. Dream till it's real.
Turning of night.
sang to her the unearthly choir. Lady of moonlight, lady of day, I am lost, so lost on my way. What path do my feet tread now? To the shade of the golden
and welcome back to Mages, Sages, and Seers. Today we have a crossover with our community wellness shows, and we'll be speaking with Frater Serpentis Satori about making wise food choices and thereby saving the planet. Greetings and welcome, Satori. How are you?
All right.
That's quite a subject for today, and I'm excited to hear more about it.
Well, it's something that apparently Al Gore himself called the dietary issue the real inconvenient truth.
Okay.
That as much as cars are an issue, one of the issues no one wants to talk about in any of this is how our diet affects the planet and how that is going to be one of the harder things to change because no one wants to change it because everybody wants there. I mean, there was even a thing recently about Biden trying to take away your hamburgers that made a big thing in the right-wing media.
I missed that one.
Well, I pay attention to what they're saying on the other side, and there was a whole big thing about because of Build Back Better and the Green New Deal, they were going to take away our hamburgers.
I guess it wasn't enough to take away our guns.
Well, I have to lie about something.
I haven't been following that. I know that, I was actually a carnivore. I used to eat a lot of beef, and ever since the quality of the beef was lessened under the last administration, beef hasn't really tasted right to me, so I've been avoiding it. So. Without intending to cut back dramatically on my beef consumption, and as beef was my favorite meat, I cut back on all my meat consumption by a tremendous amount in the past, I'd say, half year.
And that's what everyone needs to figure out how to do. And most people just don't want to do it because it's different. They have they're set in their ways, and they don't want to think about what the alternatives are. And a long time ago, when Omnivore's Dilemma first came out, my friend, who's also a fellow Washington Center intern, she and I have a conversation where we talk about when the day comes that real meat becomes too expensive, people will start trying the other options.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now at that day. We're now at the point where steak is significantly more expensive than it was a year ago. So it is becoming a luxury item. And the fake meats are becoming less expensive. And all the other vegetarian options just take getting used to, as well as the fact that the younger generation is more and more moving toward less meat anyway.
Yeah, why is that? Why is meat becoming more expensive now? Why is it becoming a luxury item? I've noticed, too, that the prices have been escalating. The amount of meat you get and the amount of meat that's packaged for you to get in supermarkets has been decreasing.
Because of the supply chain issue and because there are only so many meat processing plants in America. And because there's higher demand and less product, so those prices are going up. But I knew this was going to come a long time ago. And originally when they put out the Beyond Burgers, they seemed expensive because they were $7 for a four-pack. But now that's the same as the regular ones.
Right.
In the same way with the sausage, the fake sausage was $8 a pack, but right now the regular brats are almost the same. So at that point, it does become a ethics and health issue if the cost is the same.
Right, it does. I know also for me, the processed meat, which I don't eat a lot of processed meat, but occasionally for something quick feed, I would have like hot sausage, beef sausage or something that I could just prepare very quickly and get my protein. But lately, everything tastes a lot saltier. And I'm not a big fan of excess salt, so I've been laying off that as well, which is, again, one of the things I would do for a quick meal or a quick snack. So I've been cutting back on that too.
And that's an easy area to replace with the fake stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fake stuff doesn't have any doesn't have the extra salt and doesn't have all the, like, the weird bits in it that sausage has that are kind of gross.
One of the problems that I run into with the plant-based products is that a lot of them use soy or soy isolates, which are not good for me, for a variety of reasons. And part of it is my diabetes. There are certain foods that I've vegetable foods that set it off. And also as a weightlifter, there are some foods that bodybuilders have learned not to indulge in, like for instance, soy raises estrogen levels, so that's kind of like avoid soy from that angle too.
Well, it's an everything in moderation thing. That bodybuilders need to avoid soy, but now that's been taken up by the whole right wing about soy and mind control because they have to lie about something. Because I don't.
Okay.
But it's also, well, it's fine if you aren't doing just soy.
Yeah, I'm finding other alternatives. There are meat alternatives. There are non-meat alternatives, like for instance with a protein powder. I'm finding that certain brands now, like Sun Warrior, which taste fantastic and don't have any meat in them, the amino acids are gotten from plant sources and so forth. So I've already made the switch there with my protein shakes. And then with food, I've been cutting back on the meat and just basically substituting it with plant. With the plant-based products, again, I have to see how they react to my blood, how my blood sugar reacts to them and so forth. So it's a process. But given the fact that meat no longer tastes good, it's a process I have to undergo.
Yeah, it's a process a lot of people are undergoing, because you're not the only person I've talked to who's talked about that hamburgers taste funny now. And one of the things I did, because I consider myself a real omnivore, because carnivores are carnivores and vegetarians are vegetarians. If you're in the middle, you're an omnivore. The people on both extremes don't like that I'm an omnivore. And I'm like, well, but the people who are carnivores have to get used to the tofu and the tempeh and the fact that I use the fake Mexican crumbles because they're cheaper than the real thing and they taste better and they keep forever. I don't have to worry about how long it's been sitting in the refrigerator. Like tempeh, my tempeh can sit in the refrigerator almost forever. And once you know how to cook it, it's fine. Like the beans and rice I was making that made me a little late has tempeh in it rather than fake sausage, because I always have tempeh laying around because I use it as my normal when I need protein that isn't garbanzos in salad or on top of noodles, I'll just throw the tempeh in with the noodles, and that's the protein.
I have to look into the tempeh. What is the tempeh made from?
Tempeh is really, really extreme tofu. It's a couple notches beyond extra firm. So it has fully fermented, giving it a like weird nutty taste, which is a turnoff to some people, but other people like. Well, it became one of my meat alternatives during the times when I didn't have enough money to have real meat. I could always just put the do like I'm doing right now and put the tempeh in the beans and rice rather than sausage to bulk it up a little bit and give it more protein.
When I used to eat tofu years ago, I remember one of the good things about tofu is it would be whatever flavor you decided it was. So it was something you could add to food, and it would taste like whatever you wanted it to taste like, depending on how you prepared it. I'm guessing tempeh is much the same thing.
Sort of the same, but because it has a little more personality, it doesn't really absorb flavors, but if you roast it or cook it, it brings out the nutty flavor.
Okay.
If you boil it or steam it, it tones that down. But it still has a little more firmness and a little more personality than tofu. But yeah, that is tofu's advantage. Tofu's advantage is if you love barbecue sauce and you're at the point where, for whatever reason, you don't want to do chicken breast anymore, just learn to marinate the tofu in the barbecue sauce for a couple nights.
Okay. So you get that barbecue flavor and texture, but without any of the disadvantages of meat.
Right. And right now at half the price.
We started growing some of our own vegetables. Athena does that mostly. She has a garden outside. When we didn't have a backyard, we used to do it around our windows. You know, there's like window gardening that anybody could do. I've done that in apartments. I used to make my own pickles when I lived in apartments years ago. So I know that anybody with windows, you know, and a little bit of space can start growing their own vegetables. And there's nothing like the homegrown tomatoes. They're like so much better than tomatoes you buy in stores. And so it is with all the vegetables you grow for your own.
Well, when I was living in Milwaukee, we had a very large closet, and my roommate and I were talking about, like, other possible potential uses for the closet. I'm like, if you trust me with the closet and we want to invest in all of the lights and the water hookup, we could grow tomatoes and basil in the closet.
Right.
Our friends all think there's marijuana in the closet, and they'll be disappointed when they're tomatoes.
Yeah,
that's an expensive white rig. What's that doing in the closet? Not what you think.
Right. Yeah, I remember a lot of people used to think that when we used to have we used to grow sprouts under the sink and all this stuff. People thought it was pot. It's like, no, it's not pot. It's salad for our dinners.
Yeah, I used to do that when I lived in New Orleans until the old school. Well, that's another one of those cookbooks that keeps coming and going out of favor. Is Diet for a Small Planet hasn't gone away.
Uh-huh.
I was talking to a friend of mine in their 20s about that, because she was talking about how, like, when I was preparing the bibliography for today, I was explaining to her that a lot of witches in my generation own Passionate Vegetarian and Veganomicon for everything in the recipe part of the book. And most of us do own Diet for a Small Planet because we still have one.
And it's
one of those things that never goes away, but Diet for a Small Planet tells you how to do all the things like sprouting and all of those things. And you can probably find it on Amazon for a quarter.
Right.
But yes, sprouting your own stuff is good. All of that is good, but it's meat reduction that's the real issue. And there's actually something that just came out called Just Eggs, which is this fake egg substitute that I wasn't able to get in time for today's program because I was going to try to do. That was what made me late for class today, was my roommate was wondering where the fake bacon and eggs thing was. I'm like, I didn't get paid on the right day. We have to do that later. Bunch of fake bacon and the fake eggs are a different experiment now, but I need to do that for me to find out if that's okay for me, because eggs are going up in price too.
Right.
And there are a lot of places online where you can learn how to combine tofu and garbanzo juice to make fake eggs. And
right.
Now there's the new Just Eggs stuff. And when people start buying the Just Eggs stuff enough, like, I can buy tempeh at Target now. I never would have imagined that even 10 years ago. But I get it from Target, and Target makes their own tofu now, because of how much the world has changed.
I like the title Veganomicon. That sounds like something I'd like
Veganomicon.
To read.
No, that's those are the two cookbooks everyone owns. All of my witchy friends own both of those books. No, Veganomicon's a really good book, and it's funny because one of my friends at one point was trying to use my photographic memory, going like, okay, since Hecate's collection of cookbooks is part of why women come into your house. Where is this soup recipe? Like, oh, the not borscht. That's the Veganomicon, actually.
Okay.
That's actually in the Veganomicon. It's one of the weirder recipes in there, but it's one I think it must be really popular.
Yeah, I never heard of
it. Passionate Vegetarian, even though it's vegetarian rather than vegan, goes into covers that side of the spectrum very well. And also, again, has all of the, like, the vegetable-heavy thing that is the major part of the transition when you stop being a carnivore and start eating more vegetables.
Now, why you had spoken in a private conversation about why it's important for us to cut back on meat. Can you go into that a little bit? Other than
the UN thing about methane emissions, that cattle is responsible for slightly more methane emissions at the conservative end of the spectrum, or at the more extreme end of the spectrum, methane emissions from cows and dairy maybe twice what methane emissions are from coal and fossil fuel.
Oh, wow.
And the easy, and there's also the additional element that wasn't figured in the UN study about how almost all deforestation is the result of the cattle industry. So if you love trees, you need to cut back on your meat. Which is how Irish witches call this conversation the food fight. Because at a certain point in any of their romantic relationships, they have to have a conversation about there's nothing wrong with wanting to have meatloaf or a steak or ribs. But we can't do that every day. And okay. You and I both came to the 50% number through different reasons. You want to talk to me about where your source is for the 50% meat reduction is?
With mine, beef.
No, most, I know, but what the source of the 50% number is, because a few years ago, we were reducing by a third, and then I guess when the world got closer to ending, we had to accelerate our meat reduction?
Yeah, with me, it was a matter of a taste. Because I'm very... I have to be very selective about my food because of the diabetes. There's a very narrow range of things that I can consume, and meat happened to be one of the things I could consume as long as I watched the fat content for cholesterol. But when meat started not tasting good, I had to seek other things that would give me the protein that I needed and the fats that I needed, healthier fats. So that's what started that quest, and I found that as meat got more expensive, and it still doesn't taste quite right, we've cut it down considerably, or we've modified how we prepare it. Like, for instance, whereas before I might have had, let's say, two beef patties without bread or anything, but just two beef patties. Now,
right.
Because beef patties don't taste right by themselves anymore, I'll have one beef patty with tomato sauce and mozzarella cheese on top and some spices and make it like a pizza burger, again, without bread because of my diabetes. But instead of having two patties, I'll have one patty with the tomato sauce and the cheese. So the protein comes from the cheese. The tomato sauce provides lycopene and a bunch of other nutrients. So, I've cut that meal, let's say, in half, and I could go down the line with things like that.
Well, it was interesting because at one point when I had a bunch of guys living with me, there are four of us, so I got a package of one of the fake burgers at half price.
Okay.
I don't remember, it had a half price sticker. And so I decide that I'm going to do one of my easy cheats that makes the fake burgers taste better on the fake burgers, but I'm going to have them with polenta and real cheese and real Canadian bacon. And after everybody eats it, they'll see where the burgers came from. Because with
okay.
me, you're never quite sure. And they thought they were the best burgers ever. And I'm like, you understand, the beef is the sinful part. The cheese is less of a danger to the planet, and the Canadian bacon is ambiguous.
Okay.
But it's the same thing. It's that rather than if you did two fake burgers with Canadian bacon, you're committing way less environmental and health sin than you are if both of those burgers were real.
We've been eating black bean burgers more too, although again, I can't have too many of those because of my diabetes. That tastes very good on its own. I happen to like a Mexican spiced plant burger, but Athena doesn't like it. So that I have, that's one of the things that I'll occasionally
eat. That's the most common version of a black bean burger is combining the black bean with the salsa.
Mm-hmm.
In the burger. That's the most common version of that. And a bunch of my friends ended up doing quite a bit of those in the post-COVID aftermath because we had too many beans in the house, which led to, what do I do with 7 pounds of black beans as a single person? Like, yeah, that's true. That's beans and rice for a lot of Mondays.
For a long time, yes.
That's a lot of Mondays worth of black beans. But yeah, that's a common variant, but there are other versions of that. Okay, I'm going to use this as a jump into the two transition books.
Okay.
The two transition books that, well, they're from opposite perspectives, but their recipes are fairly similar, and their content is fairly similar. They just come from different points of view about why we need to transition. One is the Forks Over Knives cookbook, and if you're having this conversation with yourself, you need to at least see the documentary of Fork Over Knives, because it is the one that is based on the health side of the argument. The other one is Mark Bitterman's Food Matters book, and he wrote all of those books about a whole bookshelf worth of how to cook anything anyway. And his Food Matters book covers the health costs, because he lost a lot of weight when he shifted to a more plant-based diet, but it also covers the agribusiness end of it and how bad that is for everybody. And both of those have a bunch of beans and rice and vegan burgers and bean chilies and all of those things. And those are better places to start if you don't want to make the investment in the vegan Omicron and passionate vegetarian. Because those books are a little, when you're more invested in this, both of those are really good resources to have when you want to figure out how to do a vegan quiche or something more unusual. Or if you want to go vegetarian and not vegan, or vegan and not vegetarian, but I usually have both books sitting next to each other because I rotate between them and sometimes I cross-reference them. Yeah, but Bitterman's book or Fork Over Knives are both there to cover the transition because we've known for a decade that for both health reasons and planetary reasons, we were going to have this conversation within society. And since I came into this conversation back when the Omnivore's Dilemma book came out in hardcover and all of my smart friends were all reading it, because there was always a – in Greco-pagan circles, we've always had a weird mix of vegans and carnivores.
Right.
And that always led to, when I did Hecate feasts, having to do like what my roommate at one point called the double menu. I'm like, yeah, but the hypocrisy in my house isn't hypocrisy. I make the carnivores eat the hummus. The carnivores have to at least pretend to try the other half of the menu. You have to at least have the hummus. You have to at least have a little bit of the tempeh kebab. You at least have to pretend you're open to it and play along a little bit.
Because
the vegans aren't going to touch the prosciutto. The vegans they don't care about our stuff, but we should try their stuff, because maybe you'll realize you like hummus. Maybe you'll realize tempeh kebabs are interesting.
Because of my diabetes and my dietary needs, I can't have any rice or noodles or orzo or things like that. So they've created this shredded cauliflower, and sometimes they'll mix it with other vegetables, and that substitutes very nicely for rice, and it doesn't trigger off any blood sugar or other.
They actually have a device you can buy called a Veggetti Maker.
Okay.
That's like a little $10 device you can like twist around a cucumber or a carrot or something like that, and it turns it into vegetable.
Okay. I think I've had
I have
some
a friend who
zucchini. They do that to zucchini and some other things, and you can cook it like pasta.
Yeah, well, it's like a $10 gadget. because I own one around here somewhere. I have one of those laying around here somewhere that I was doing for my weird experiment with ratatouille pasta. Problem is the eggplant, of course. I haven't figured out how to make the eggplant not gross as pasta.
Okay.
Well, because eggplant has all those, like, nasty juices.
Well, I grew up with
eggplant. And, you know, it is poisonous. It is poisonous.
Like okra. A lot of people don't like okra because it's slimy, but I grew up with okra, so it's fine.
That's what I mean. Because of my background in New Orleans and voodoo, I do have a lot of eggplant and okra in my diet. Like the thing I used to have pickled in the house was pickled okra.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have hot pickled okra in the house that I refrigerator pickled. Because as soon as I would eat all of that, I would just replace it. And, yeah, okra's an acquired taste, and okra's one of those things that until people get used to its weird texture.
Yeah, they don't care for it. I know from trying to introduce okra to non-Greek friends over the years, along the way I gave up, but I remember when I was younger, I said, you got to try this, it's really great. Ew!
Yeah, I had a friend of mine try my pumpkin soup not too long ago, and she's like, I just don't like okra, it's slimy. I'm like, you get used to it. That's part of why people who like it, but... go ahead.
As a nation, we're very set in our ways, and part of the tradition I know that I grew up with, and I'm sure you grew up with too, is weekend barbecues during the warmer weather when tremendous amounts of meat are grilled on the barbecue and people have lots and lots of meat. I haven't had one of those, I'd say, in at least a decade, nor have I been invited to one in over 7 years. So that seems to be part of that is COVID and people not getting good because
and
COVID
part of it's our divided country.
But it stopped before COVID, actually, you know, the barbecues.
Yeah, I think part of that has to do with the political divisions in the country making it harder and harder for young people and old people to actually hang out and drink together.
Hmm. You know,
young people don't want to talk to grandpa about Tucker Carlson. If you're 25, you don't want to get into all the issues with Tucker Carlson with grandpa.
Yeah, the polarization is another new thing. It's always been there to some degree or other, but people like tolerated it to a degree. Now it's become a very powerful divider, and everyone has to find different ways of dealing with it. I've found that just letting people know I don't agree, that we're not going to convince each other, so let's not even try, and let's focus on something we do agree on. And there are always things that people agree on. So,
right.
So I found that whatever a person's spirituality is, whatever a person's political beliefs are, there's at least one thing we can agree on that we both feel passionate about in the same direction. Let's focus on that. Let's do that.
Well, that was a thing I sent you a while ago that was the bipartisan agreement thing by whatever group that was, because you and another friend of mine both asked me about that around the same time. And I'm like, no, there are like 100 things we all agree on. Our politicians are just intractable.
Yeah, there's a lot to be agreed on. That's why I see a lot of hope in some of the things that have been happening lately. Granted, there's still polarization, but there's also some consensus and some movement forward the way things used to function. So I have hope for that.
Yeah, we're moving maybe in that direction, but again, that's going to require our political system to change, and in Now there were gerrymandering districts again, and the gerrymandered districts just add to the problem.
That's very true.
The gerrymandered districts are why politicians don't have... There was a big thing in Politico magazine earlier in the week was talking about how gerrymandering is America's real blood sport, and about how part of how politicians are saving themselves is by getting rid of swing districts entirely.
Yeah, that's a topic for another conversation, though.
That's a topic for a different conversation, but that's also part of the generational divide, and a lot of this is a generational divide, because the younger you are, the more likely you are to be less of a carnivore. However much you are on the omnivore flexitarian spectrum, because one of my friends, who's also ambidextrous and used to work at the voodoo shop, she and I always have thought about it as like it's a percentile thing.
Mm-hmm.
That someone who's on the omnivore spectrum and isn't at the extreme end of meat and cheese all the time as a carnivore, or the other extreme of being a vegan. But she and I talk about that in the same way as extreme religious, or that both of those point of views are a sort of fanaticism.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who hold those point of views, when you try to converse with them in a factual way, don't want to hear your facts in the same way any other kind of fanatic doesn't want to hear your facts.
That's very true.
And so it's harder to get those people toward the middle. No, but that's exactly Moby's point, which led us to having this conversation right now, is Moby says, because I'm a vegan, people think I come from that opinion. If I were a meat eater and I held the same opinions, people might listen to me more. And as someone who has the steak every week for Hecate, whenever I have to deal with a new housemate who wonders if I'm a vegan and then sees me make the steak every week, and the look I get, like, I never said I was that. I never said I was vegan. I said, we all need to move more toward the center in all things. But I think that's my opinion as a child of the Greek gods. Everything in moderation.
In moderation, all excellence.
Right.
So how do we, yesterday on our theurgy forum, we were tackling not this particular issue, but like several issues, you know, in terms of communication. How do we continue this conversation on a larger scale and make sure that it continues? If we need this awareness to keep our planet going and to remain alive, what can we do to basically have this conversation continue without triggering people's stances and their not wanting to listen to facts?
Pick up the two transitional books I recommended and read both, so you can come from the food business perspective and also the health perspective, because they're both... Well, those are differences in our perspectives. I'm coming from the perspective of saving the planet, and you're coming from the I need to cut down on my meat for health reasons. But it's also embracing Meatless Mondays, which is easy if you do beans and rice anyway. Meatless Mondays for the New Orleans crowd was easy because that just meant more beans and rice. Trying out all of the fake meats, seeing if you think the fake sausage tastes better than the real thing, seeing if you think the expensive fake bacon tastes better than the real thing. Because that was the experiment I was trying to do before airtime. Originally, I was going to have my housemates have one plate of this and one plate of that and see if they could tell me which was which.
Okay.
And I wasn't able to do that right now, but the reason we're having this conversation is because everybody has some, if you have younger people in your life, you're having some version of the food fight at Thanksgiving and or Christmas and or New Year's. That when my household decided to do Thanksgiving, I took on doing the vegan side of the menu because I know how to do it. The fact that we have a couple of vegans coming, they're like, oh, no, Satori's got it. It'll be fine. It'll be great. Are we going to have enough of everything? Like making last minute stuff, making a second batch of stuffing isn't a problem.
Okay.
And the Washington Post did a piece yesterday about how there are a bunch of vegetarian and vegan items that might outshine the turkey. If you want to go hit the Washington Post when you're done listening to us, that's a very interesting piece, although they do steer toward a bunch of egg dishes. It is more vegetarian than vegan because it's the Washington Post. But still, it's that. It's that I have never actually had a tofuki, because normally when I have to do that, one of the vegans has a talk with me about tempeh while I'm preparing for Thanksgiving. Okay. I'm like, okay, no, show me your weird tempeh dish. I need to learn anyway. But I have a dietary issue of not being able to have mushrooms. So because
okay.
I can't have mushrooms, I could never really be vegan, because most vegan things contain mushrooms or mushroom essence or something. So that has always been an obstacle to me, even if I didn't end up in the middle of this argument as the centrist. But the more you move toward the 50% number that we all need to move toward for planetary reasons, much less for health reasons, the more people look in your kitchen and look in your refrigerator and have the conversation one of my girlfriends had with me in Milwaukee, where she saw that we had bacon and tempeh, almond milk, and expensive milk from the dairy.
Okay.
And, of course, her initial assumption is one of you is a carnivore and one of you is a vegan. Like, no, actually, both of us are in the middle.
I had to give up most dairy, too, for the same reasons, for health reasons. So I've been using nut milks, and I recently tried a keto milk, which is mostly fats milk, but I wasn't as fond of that as I was of the nut milk. So that's another transition from
an
animal.
And you can make nut milk at home.
Excuse me?
You can make nut milk at home, and nut milk is easy to make if you have a good nut blender.
Okay.
And it's way better for you.
It's much it's cheaper than milk too, so it's pretty available.
Cheaper than milk is now. That wasn't true a couple years ago, but now it's true.
Now, Veganomicon, I found that and I put it on the page. I found A Diet for a Small Planet, and I'm putting that on the page. And you mentioned a third book.
Passionate Vegetarian. Crescent Dragon Wagon.
Okay. Type that in.
I went through and made sure all the books still existed on Amazon a couple days ago. So I double-checked the reading list.
You can pick up a copy for as little as a couple of dollars and as much as $30, I guess, for a deluxe or brand-new edition.
Right. But a lot of these books are that way because a lot of people cycle in and out of it. And that's why there are so many people out there who are former vegans, former vegetarians, who are now somewhere in being that centrists. And most of the witches I know are somewhere in dietary centrism, because most of us at some point have gone vegan, either as a result of an ethical thing or an initiatory thing, or just trying to see if we can do it. And eventually you flex back and you decide, well, a little bit of bacon's okay. A steak occasionally is okay. How bad is it? If I only do rotisserie chicken once a month, how bad is that for the planet?
Mm-hmm.
But those are all the compromises we need to make, because we just need to reduce, which is your thing about using real mozzarella on your burgers, and me putting Canadian bacon and cheddar on my fake burgers, because from the environmental standpoint, the idea is to reduce.
Right. And
if
like
we all reduce a little bit,
like with the
milk. Well, we're all being forced to reduce right now for economic reasons, so we might as well become more conscious about it.
Right. And like I said, with the nut milk, that's replaced milk, but for some milk products, the almond or the cashew versions aren't good because they're high in sugar. So like things like yogurt, Greek yogurt, things like different types of cheeses.
If you make your own cashew milk, it's not as high in sugar. It's high in sugar because of how our food system is set up. If you make your own nut milk or rice milk, it isn't as high in sugar because it doesn't have the added sugar.
No, it's not the milks that have the sugar. You can get the milks unsweetened. It's other like yogurt and cheese that they make out of the nuts. Those tend to be high in sugar or something else. And I've tried them, and I've had ill results. I had to go back to using real yogurt and real cheese and things like that. But as you said, you need to make some accommodations. But I don't have them every day as well. They're like a few times a week.
Right, I very rarely buy milk because I don't drink milk anymore when it became so expensive. And it also started tasting weird to me after I left Wisconsin when I was buying real milk from a real dairy and paying for it.
Uh-huh.
But I learned how to make nut and rice milk a long time ago because rice milk is the cheapest thing, especially if you have an Instant Pot and a blender. You make a couple cups of rice with whatever you're flavoring it with in the Instant Pot. Let it cook for an hour,
mm-hmm.
pour it in the blender, and make it into rice milk. Poof. And depending on what you flavor it with, it's costing you less than $1 for your whole blender full of rice milk.
Oh, that's really good.
Well, because the entire pound of rice at Target costs $1. So anything you do that is less than the entire pound costs you less than $1.
So,
in the middle of COVID led to one of my New Orleans friends making a comment about the $2 avocados, that she was commenting that her entire bag of beans and her entire bag of rice cost $2 together. The avocado costing $2.
Yeah, avocado
was more than the net worth of the entire bag of beans and the entire bag of rice.
Yeah, more and more people are eating avocados.
Hello?
And avocados have gotten more affordable sometimes.
Yeah, they've gotten affordable again, but that's also supply and demand. But at the time, she was right about the avocado having a higher net worth than the entire bag of beans and the entire bag of rice.
Right.
So putting the avocado on the beans and rice, the avocado was what was decadent. Like, yeah, it's weird that the avocado is more expensive than the salsa right now. That's wacky.
Now, I'm at a particular point in time as I've been before, where I'm setting up Age of Heroes initiatives, and this certainly seems worthy of setting up an initiative and doing more than talking about it and raising awareness. So you and I in our conversations will come up with something, and let's do it.
I already have the reading list together. I've already prepped a lot of it as a module, and I was thinking when we do a in-house cookbook for Hercules Invictus, A long time ago, back in New Orleans, my group got nicknamed the Teen Titans because the cartoon was on at the time. And if you knew the main characters in New Orleans at the time, you would when we all had a couple of drinks at a bar, you definitely thought that we were the Titans out causing trouble. And, you know, there's old Titans thing about pizza. But
right.
A long time ago, there was a thing about the vegan, vegetarian, transitional cookbook, me and my friend who I will call Ray for the sake of this conversation. Whenever people want the centrist point of view in the food fight, they talk to us because they understand, like, we both cook with tempeh. We both know how to make nut milk. We have made our own tofu. We're people that know how to do all these things, and in some ways we're over it, but that's also why, like, everybody wants Thanksgiving to be at my house, because then the vegans aren't going to feel pressured to have the turkey, but the meteors are going to go, like, no, you want to try the mashed potatoes, and I know tempeh in the stuffing seems weird, but you should try it. But I was thinking about doing that as one of our in-house things anyway, of having, because part of how we solve this problem, as a number of charities here in Chicago have figured out, is you teach people to cook again.
And unfortunately, we only have a little bit more than a minute, so this will have to be a to-be-continued. But if you're game, I'm game. Let's make this into a crusade.
Okay, well, let you know more of the information, because I've been, this has been something, you know, I've been on since back when the daughter of Apollo was with us, and she and I were both toward this, although she sort of treated me like a hypocrite about this. Like, I never described, I'm an omnivore. I'm a child of Hecate. I think the people on both ends of the extreme are fanatics.
Uh-huh.
All right, I guess we will move toward this in a more concrete way within the organization then.
Thank you very much, Satori. And I look forward to our next conversation, both on and off the air.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon, and thanks to all who tuned in, whether you called and are in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking this out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky. But only if you